So how you doing, Bonnie?
I'm doing good.
I got a message through just my regular, contact us email the other day from a guy. I don't directly remember his name off the top of my head, but anyway, he sent me a message saying, "Oh, go check out my YouTube site." So I went to his YouTube site and started watching various videos, and so many of them were very related to what you are talking about tonight, that I immediately reached back out to him and said, like, "Hey, you clearly want to come on Tuesday. I have a speaker coming talking about this."
Was that
And
Norman?
Norman, hang on, let
Norman.
me go look. Eventually, he said, "Oh yeah, she and I are very good friends. We
It
go."
sounds like him.
But I don't think that name rings a bell. So hang on just a second. See if I can find him. First name was Michael. I
Yep,
don't know what his
sometimes he goes by Michael.
Okay,
Yep,
that's the
that's
same
him.
guy.
Yep, that same guy.
He said he like reviewed your book and
Oh
said,
yeah, he was pretty much the first case I worked on. And so he and
"Oh,
I,
wait,
he.
was he the guy who was the teacher of your kid?"
No.
Okay.
But he was the first case that we're in. He would come over to my house in my basement, and we would work on my amicus brief for his case. And he helped me a lot. He taught me case law because he was fighting his ex-wife for years. So he knew all the court procedures. He knew how to write a brief. He knew the mechanics of this, all this law stuff, because I didn't know anything. I'm a math major. I don't know this stuff.
Math
And
major.
he, so math major, computer science person. What does that, so he was the one that really taught me the ins and outs of how to write a brief. What is this case law stuff? Why do you need it? Why do you have to put in your brief? Why do you have to reference it? In addition to statutes. So he was very important in me learning how to advocate properly. So I want to give him big a large amount of kudos. Okay. So but yeah, we were in my basement and he reviewed stuff. I'd write stuff. He said, "You have to do this, you have to do that," because he had litigated so much with his wife and he represented himself. So
I got it. I got it.
I Yeah, 8 months. Yeah, 8 months writing that stuff. And he was down in my basement a couple days a week.
That's
So
awesome.
anyway, a big thank you to him. And yeah, we've become good friends.
That's awesome. Well, I'm glad to hear that he's out there spreading the word his own way.
Yep.
It's really good news. We can enjoy more of those, the better. More people out there spreading the truth about this bullshit registry, better off we are.
I know. And I just got news last night that somebody else got sentenced. He has five kids, okay? Five kids, and somehow got snagged in some possession of child pornography or something. And his church was behind him. He's hardworking, 'cause he just got sentenced to 7 years with no visitation even. No visitation for five kids.
Yeah, the idea that we're somehow saving kids or keeping kids safe when we do things like that. Like,
When
I had
he
a.
has five children and he can't see any of them for 7 years, and he can't
Wow.
support them, he can't provide for them, he can't do anything, he can't be a dad to them. How is that
How's that helping
improve?
children?
Yeah, how is that improving family life?
Yeah. I
Yeah.
talked to a guy the other day. It was actually months ago, but his son had gotten sentenced for looking at AI generated cartoon porn, and in this car these cartoon teenagers were having sex with each other, and that's apparently enough to put you in prison. So now he's out and they won't let him live with his family. So basically his poor wife is raising three little bitty kids by herself, and they're trying to spend twice as much money on housing because he's living in one place and she's living in another place. And again, it's like
It's crazy. It,
th
you
that's
know,
even
it.
the dumbest thing because it's AI generated, so there wasn't a real person making it, and it's not even real people having sex. Like, why do
I
we
know.
care what kind of cartoons you watch? Such
You know,
nonsense.
tell me about it. And Virginia just passed a law saying, oh, yeah, that's a crime to have cartoons. But they were the first. So I'm going to touch a little bit about that in my brief about
Ooh, excellent.
how the law has evolved, and it all started in Virginia. I'm sorry, the rest of the country, but Virginia is where it started, and that's where I'm at, and we'll get
Well,
into
we'll just
that.
have to blame it on you because I'm sure it's because you live there.
Of course, it's my fault.
No, I'm only kidding. All
Oh, we
right, we
have
still have
someone named
another.
Virginia. My mother-in-law was named Virginia too. So
All right. Hey, Mike.
we see the top of your head and that's all. Now it's gone.
I'm
I just sent Mike a
readjusting.
journal. You're readjusting.
Yeah.
I didn't, I think I saw that you responded to my email, but I haven't read it yet, for the record.
May I say this? Virginia is from Virginia also, and my
Wow.
case started in Virginia, or my loved one's case. So,
Well, I'm sorry it started in Virginia. So that's all I can say, you know.
I am too. I was born and raised there. Just all
I've
my
been
family.
here, what, 35 years now? So.
My family still lives there. So I'm very interested in what you have to say.
Well,
Bonnie is
great.
fascinating.
Well,
It's like a chock full of the amount of information that she has stuffed in her head is quite spectacular.
This is my latest book for all of you. They can see it. It's Manufacturing Criminals. It's a second edition. And it's got the red rectangles on it versus the blue one, so you can kind of quickly tell which one it is. So anyway, this is the latest book, and that's what I'm going to be talking about tonight. And some of the sections there's a lot that's the same, but some of it is corrected, but there's a lot that's been beefed up, especially in the child pornography area. I have screenshots of the wiretapping software and all kinds of goodies. So
Right, we still have 1 minute and maybe a couple. Does anybody have any questions or comments you want to raise while we're waiting? You guys all know how to raise your hand, right? Down in the bottom, there's a button. Either it'll say raise hand or it will say more. Let's see. No, it's under reactions. That's where it is. So if anybody has a question, and I think Bonnie said, I think when I asked you, you said you'd rather kind of, unless your question is like a, I got to stop you right now thing, you'd rather wait till you will occasionally pause and offer people the chance to do it.
occasionally I'll have to get a drink of water because, my mouth gets dry when I talk so much. But otherwise, I'd prefer to keep the questions to the end. So take notes.
Yes,
And
take good notes, and I love it when we take our notes in the war room. Although, if you put a question in the war room,
I'll let you monitor that
maybe
and ask me the questions,
it is kind of hard to manage all the things and read questions off the thing. So I would prefer you to just raise your hand and ask the question. But I love it when you put them in the comment section also, because that way, later on when we save the chat, we have options to see what you asked.
And I have some of the slides have a lot of material on them, but since I've spoken to you before, some of the things I'm just going to skim over because I've talked over. So, but it is there for your reference. Okay. So some of the slides I'm just going to I have a
Is
lot of
here.
slides.
Okay, and somebody just asked, is your book in PDF?
Yes. Well, it's in Kindle. I have put the prior version in PDF. I didn't know if anybody actually bought the PDF because I didn't see anybody actually buy PDF. But if somebody wants to buy the like an EPUB, is that what you're asking for? Is that what you're asking for? Is an EPUB?
I don't know, it was just a typed question. He just says no Kindle, but for iBooks. I didn't know that was a thing.
Well, it's out on Kindle. I can put it out on EPUB, but I don't. Last version, nobody bought it. If somebody wants an EPUB version, I can do that. That I believe is a PDF. I don't know if that will work on an iBook. I haven't actually used iBook before, so if you can answer that question, I'll be happy to. But right now, I don't have the EPUB of the second version because nobody really bought the
Right,
first
what
one.
wasn't it?
Pardon me?
Okay,
that was her.
Probably.
That's her.
Just say, hey, is this Terry?
I think
Hey,
maybe
is this
somebody doesn't know
Terry?
they're not muted. Oh, I know, it's probably Massachusetts Mike because we were talking, or I mean not Massachusetts Mike, Mike
Fucking
Teeter,
call back.
because we were talking to Mike Teeter a minute ago and probably didn't
I just
re
got
read,
my entertainment going.
or maybe J Master, there we go. All right, well, I think it would be safe for you to begin. Oops, hang on, why do I always do this? I like kind of halfway plan some things to say when you arrive, and then by the time you come, I've like done 17 other things and do not find them. And if I have to wing it, I will do it, but I'd rather not. There we go. Bonnie Burkhart. All right. Ms. Burkhart is a software engineer who builds, whoops, sorry, who builds interception systems for the Department of Defense. As such, she is well trained on interception and privacy law for her job. And then somebody she knew, I think her daughter's
My
teacher or
daughter's teacher,
something,
yep.
got arrested, and she was like, wait, what? this doesn't make any sense. So she started kind of looking into it and learning more and more about it. And I've seen her speak, I think, I can't remember if it was the NARSL conference or the WAR conference a year ago, but she's very interesting. And she knows more about ICAC and the nonsense things. And now she's like a court appointed, a court allowed. She's allowed to give expert testimony for different kinds of law things. What is that word for that?
Well, cases. An expert witness for computer science and software engineering. I can't actually talk about police policies and procedures or law, but what I do is I support the attorneys so they can argue it well. So I give them suggestions, and sometimes they just cut and paste my suggestions into their motions. So that's kind of cool. But I'm not an attorney. And will I be at the NARSL conference? Not this time. Okay. All right. You're muted.
I know you were at the last one of the last conferences I went to, because I know I met you in person there. Anyway, take it away, Bonnie.
All right. Do you want to share my screen? All right. Can you all see that now? All right. I am going to go to slideshow from the beginning. Okay. Y'all can see that? All right. This is Manufacturing Criminals, second edition. I'm going to talk a little bit more about the wiretapping and another section, which is planning evidence, which I received from an expert in for digital forensics. So I have to give him credit for that. Okay. I am not an attorney, so I don't give legal advice. Please don't take this as legal advice. Otherwise, I'll get in trouble for practicing law without a license. So I am not an attorney. I'll say that up front. Okay. What I'm going to talk about, I'm going to talk about the two areas of crimes that police are going after and how they're violating the laws when they go after each of them. The first is finding solicitation of a minor. And here they are manufacturing criminals because they're impersonating an imaginary person online in a sting operation, or they're impersonating a child. And anyway, this next category I'll talk about is the wiretapping that's going on without a warrant. And this is done to find people who have downloaded child pornography, either in email or peer-to-peer networks, then how they remotely break into computers and search them also without a warrant. In both of these, they don't know who they're actually talking to because all they have is an IP address. So how do they unmask your identity without a warrant that they're supposed to have? And finally, what is the impact and cost that is a societal cost? Just a little history for the, it's like I said, this all started in Virginia. What started in Virginia spread across the country. So I apologize, always will. First, they had to create the crime of solicitation of a minor, because this wasn't a crime back in the day, and possession of child pornography was a class three misdemeanor. So here, ICAC was started in 1998. So in order to make a multi-billion-dollar industry to go hunt for pedophiles, they had to actually make it worth their while, and they had to invent the crime to go hunt for. So that was the first step. By the way, the ICAC officers have sworn under oath in multiple states now, because I just heard it in Louisiana, that they have no training on interception privacy law. Surprise, surprise. Who would expect law enforcement to know about law? All right. Crimes that when ICAC was founded, certainly creation of child pornography was a crime, was a felony, but possession was a class three misdemeanor, which in Virginia, which was equivalent to shoplifting, you know, stealing a chocolate bar. There was no crime for a solicitation of a minor for cartoons or for imposters, and there was no sex offender registry for possession of child pornography or for solicitation of a minor. So what happened? They had to create the crime in the law. So the first thing they did was to create a new felony in Virginia to create a crime for soliciting a cartoon. So anyone who solicits any person he knows or has reason to believe is a minor, which is the current law of the land in Virginia. And this spread across the country that if you don't have to be a real minor, you can just be someone that, you know, if you're a 45-year-old man and you just say, oh, I'm a 13-year-old girl, well, that's a girl. That's enough to have reason to believe it actually is a minor. Then they increased the severity of possession of child pornography twice. They increased it to class one misdemeanor, which means you could get jail time, and then class up to to a felony. There also is no exception for personal photos of family. There's no for housemates, for your girlfriend that you can legally have sex with at age 16, and you simply take a picture of her while you're doing what you can legally do. People are sitting in prisons for a decade for photos of their legal girlfriends and housemates and family members. And the sex offender registry, they just keep adding years and years and years to that. So this has rippled nationwide. In the federal case, apparently someone must have challenged this because Sentencing Commission said, well, you can't sentence someone when the victim is a cartoon. And so they changed the sentencing guidelines in 2004 to say, oh, right, we'll add cartoons to the list of who can be a victim. So number one is what used to be the statute, which is individuals who have not attained the age of 18, but then they added fictitious people and law enforcement people who are adults who just claim to be under the age of 18, even though the picture shows otherwise. So this has been added to the not to the criminal code, but to the Sentencing Commission policies and procedures. So it's not officially in statutes, but that's allows them to keep you in jail because now they said you can keep you in jail for a cartoonist victim. Cartoons, how do they make a cartoon? A realistic cartoons now qualify as an official minor with rights. They create the cartoon by using a picture of an adult with a fake backstory. And I have samples here in my presentation. It's a bait, hook, and reel in. You post it on an adult-only website with no age shown. Sometimes they actually do show the age of being 19. Then men express interest in this hot-looking woman. Sometimes it's a man, but it's a hot-looking woman. And then they hook them and reel them in. They start the text messages. They exchange messages, pretending to be the person online. Then they use entrapment to manufacture the crime. And somewhere along the line, they say, oh, I'm really 14 years old. But this also not only is illegal interception and identity theft and all that, but it's also Fifth Amendment violation because you cannot confront your accuser if they are a cartoon. Okay, now, on the federal side, the guys, the suspects that the officers are going after are then charged with this crime of coercion and enticement. But if you read law carefully, you cannot coerce and entice a cartoon to travel to meet you to have a sexual encounter. Instead, the officers have created a cartoon and they are causing the suspect to travel to engage in something which would cause them to be arrested. So the officers are technically the ones that are committing this crime and enticing the suspect to travel. So anyway, that's my take on it. Talk to a lawyer about it. And so far, this has yet to stand up in court, but it's my opinion. So, okay, how do they manufacture a sex offender? This is solicitation of a minor, and I'm going to show you four different examples. This is supposedly a minor. Now, if you look closely at this picture, I would say that that does not ex show a 13-year-old girl, especially when the advertisement says I'm 19, and the website they go on says the terms of use says you by clicking on this, you verify and confirm that you're 21 years or older. You understand you must add all content, and you agree to confirm that you are 21. So this is the assumption going into these dating sites that you are 21 and everyone using it is 21, and the picture clearly shows someone who's not underage. So, but yet this is what they're using as bait. All right. Here is a lady in Virginia. And I believe this is Yesley Vega, but she is a law enforcement officer. She worked in the Richmond area originally when, and then she got married, moved away, and then moved overseas with her military spouse and then came back to settle in Prince William. And you can be a judge of that as to whether or not that is the same person, but she was the only Latina lady in the entire Richmond area. And anyway, she was recognized by the officers in her county as being the girl in the office and the only girl who looked like that. But and a couple weeks after she was recognized, she quit the law enforcement and suddenly went into running for a county commissioner. But she still claims it's not her, even though it made her quit her job that she was recognized as a mother with two children. She was still recognized 10 years later. And I did interview one lady who was auditioning for these pictures to be a model for these pictures. And they do not tell the women that pose for these pictures that they are going to be pimped 10 years later when they're married with children, and the people on the street will recognize. So that is not explained to the ladies who pose for this. So, you know, certainly if it is her, she was trying to do her patriotic duty and stop crime. But anyway, that is the ramifications are just creepy. Okay, there's four variations. Here we have an imaginary person that they created, they said with the geomorph. There's actually impersonating an adult and then claiming that they're underage. Then there's the case of a parent reporting somebody's creepy and talking to their teenage child. And then you have the third scenario where an FBI agent is impersonating a mother who's pimping their child. There's four different scenarios that I've stumbled on. Okay, the first one is this geomorph. They say this is not an imaginary person. This is an imaginary person completely made up. Well, I don't believe it, but we'll go with it. And if it isn't truly imaginary person, because you can create, there are computer programs to create an imaginary face, and you just slide the bar and you get longer hair, shorter hair, brown hair, blonde hair, whatever you want. So you can do that. But then it's an imaginary person. It's a true cartoon. There is no person behind it, and an imaginary person cannot grant consent to intercept your private communications. And they have no birth certificate. Okay. So, and it is a felony and a federal crime to impersonate someone else and intercept private communications intended for them. And that's the whole problem with this imaginary person or impersonation scenario that they use in these sting operations. Scenario number two, this is a guy that they post on a gay dating site, Grindr. If you look closely, he does not look 14 years old because he has a pretty good 5 o'clock shadow and a good Adam's apple. But he actually was impersonated using two officers. All he did was supply the picture. That was it. And there's no age. As you can see, this is the actual profile. There's no age just shown, and you have to be of age. I have to be an adult to use it. And then you had one officer, Officer B, I'll call him, who provided the texting and the history and life story behind it. And then he procured Officer G, who was younger, to actually be the voice actor for it. So you have three people portraying one person, and that is not, that's a crowd. That is not a person. And they used entrapment to create the crime. Scenario three is, every person's kind of nightmare is someone is talking to your child and it's very nefarious and you're worried, so you report to police, which is all fitting and proper. Police search the phone, fitting and proper. They should do that. That's what the police should do. But then that's where the illegal section comes in. If there was no crime committed, in this case I'm talking about here, there was no crime that had been committed yet, okay? But then they get written permission from the parent. It's called assumption of identity, online identity form that they sign. There's both a state version and an FBI version. So state and local police both do this. I've seen both forms. And they get the mother to sign it saying, you turn over your accounts, your child's accounts, and your children's passwords, and we will impersonate your child and we will go get that creep. Oh, yeah. Parents are all for it. Like, really? Okay. So they use the phone. In the teen's phone to impersonate the teen and they talk to the suspect. But the teen's phone becomes caller ID and becomes a means of identification to the suspect. And then they use entrapment to cause a crime. And even on the arrest warrant, in this one case, it says it was not with the 14-year-old male, it was with the undercover operation with an alleged 14-year-old male. So the crime did not occur with the child, it occurred with the officer impersonating the child. So you have two problems here. Is one is anything the officer typed in pretending to be the child is manufactured evidence. All right. And second, anything they intercepted, the child was not party to the conversation. So he intercepted it without the child seeing it first. So that is illegal interception because the law requires you must be party to the communication and then you can show it to somebody. But that didn't happen. The officer got it first and the child, was not party to the conversation. So it's illegal interception also. Third one is FBI agent. Okay, so here's this lady that's being advertised in FBI sting. And it's a male, this is not a male officer. Okay, you can see it's not a male officer. And then it's an adult-only dating site. So he says, it's not about me. The guy answered the ad, and it's not about me. I'm a mom with a 12-year-old, and I want my daughter to have some experiences. And what do you mean? Like, what do you want me to do? Do you want me to bring her flowers? I mean, I want to date you. And the agent refuses to meet unless the daughter can tag along. And like, what am I going to do with the daughter? I want to date you. And then he found out that the conversation was all fake. He says, oh, I got to meet my daughter after school. But he checked the times at school. He checked the dates, the events at the school. It was a totally fake conversation. He's sitting in federal prison because of this. So, and there's a case law there that says this is a type of entrapment that cannot be used, but none of the attorneys ever quote this in their defense. All right, many of the adults who go to meet this just want to see if it actually is an adult or if it truly is a child. Because if it's a child, they say, I'm walking away, but I want to see what the person really is. In one case in Washington State, they use the cop's secretary as bait. She was in her mid-20s. And when they said, well, I want to meet you and I'm not getting out of this car until I see that you're an adult. So then they took the secretary over to some house and then they shoved her out the door. So they actually saw a 26-year-old woman step out onto the foyer. And so he got out of the car expecting to date this 26-year-old woman and they arrested him for soliciting a minor. Some of the people actually have 911 pre-programmed, like who would actually pimp their daughter? And he got arrested and handcuffed before he could hit the dial button. And others think that the child is being trafficked, so
Say
they go
that
to
last one again. Say that last one again about.
the suspect actually thought that some mother was truly trying to pimp their daughter and had 911 pre-programmed into their phone to say, if this mother is truly trafficking their daughter, I'm going to call the police. And then the police arrested him for soliciting a minor before he could hit the dial button to call the police to go arrest this fake mother who's pimping her child. Okay, so you have this damsel in distress entrapment scenario going on in some cases of Asian thought he was that the youth was being trafficked, and as soon as he found out that it was underage, he told changed the tone of the conversation completely because he's a teacher and he's trained on how to detect someone being trafficked because he's got classes that he's taken as a teacher. Okay, entrapment. What do they do? And this is in the Pick case. They said they bring up the idea of I want you to show me a video. Give me a video. Use Dropbox. He said I never use Dropbox. I don't know how to use Dropbox. Send me a video from the neck down. This is the officer's talking. He goes, well, how do I send you the link? So the officer has to teach him how to send a dang link to a video in order to get to send it to him. And then he gets arrested for sending a video when the officer had to teach him and he couldn't commit the crime unless the officer taught him how to commit the crime. All right. There's also the case of intercepting communications across state lines. We had a Fairfax, Virginia officer travel up to Maryland, and this he said under oath, okay? Yeah, I moseyed up to Maryland and did this. So he impersonated somebody else, intercepted private communications across state lines, and where he has no legal authority whatsoever. Maryland is a two-party consent state, so both parties have to consent. And we tried to call Maryland and say, would you arrest this cop for illegal interception of communication across state lines? Because it's too, oh, and they laughed at us because, oh, it's a cop, whatever. And this is, if you remember Linda Tripp and Monica Lewinsky, Linda Tripp recorded a conversation while she was in Virginia and Monica Lewinsky was in Maryland. Linda Tripp got up, brought up on charges of illegal interception and communications because the other per her, Monica Lewinsky was in Maryland, which is a two-party consent state. But they won't do it for these cases. Linda Tripp, yeah, they'll arrest, but nope, not Fairfax officers sitting in Maryland. All right, let's go over the crimes that I think have been committed. Okay. First, electronic surveillance is defined in Executive Order 12333, and this is still a governing authority that is referenced by the current FBI Domestic Investigation and Operations Guide. So this, every officer, especially federal officer, must obey this sentence here. Electronic surveillance means acquiring private conversations using electronic device without the consent of a person who is a party to the conversation, or for non-electronic communications without the consent of a person who's visibly present. Now, the meaning of person cannot change. So you have to be able to pull off the same conversation while visibly present and having a chat in order to be a person who can be lawfully party to an electronic conversation. So a cop can wear a disguise and talk with a funny voice and a fake name because he can show up in person and have the same, talk with a funny voice and a fake name. But in this case, when you have a cartoon or an imaginary person or an imposter, a 40-year-old middle-aged guy impersonating a girl, you can't be visibly present and pull off the same conversation. So it is electronic surveillance and requires a warrant. Right now, the other laws that have been derived from it are the three categories: the interception law, which protects the content of your communications, emails, texts, phone calls. The pen register laws protect the routing, addressing, your email address and who owns it, stuff like that. And stored communication laws, which protect emails and peer-to-peer networks when they're stored and forwarded, and also the transactional records. And states sometimes have more restrictive copies or a variation of these. All right, this is the interception law. And like Virginia, Louisiana, and some other states have just simply copied this. Anyone who intercepts, which means just acquires the content of a communicate private communication or endeavors to intercept or procure somebody else to intercept any electronic, oral, or wire communication commits a crime. And that means, you know, if you read that thoroughly, you would commit a crime if you intercept and get your own text messages. So they put a blanket statement out there because back in 1986, when this passed, they couldn't think of all the ways you could possibly intercept stuff. So they just put a blanket out there, statement out there saying it's a crime. And then they have some exceptions, except, and but it's a crime to obtain it, it's a crime to use it, it's a crime to disclose it. So they're all separate felonies and federal crimes. And here's the exceptions. It's not a crime where such person is a party to the communication. So you can get your own communications, you can intercept your own emails, your text messages, and that, because you are the person that they are intended for. And notice in these two provisions, C and D, one is for law enforcement, one is for general citizens. The same provision is given there. So what's good for the goose is good for the gander. If the police cannot, if the general population cannot impersonate somebody else, the police can't either. And the opposite is true. If the police can intercept and impersonate somebody else, then everybody else can too, because the same phrase of the law is put in there for both law enforcement and regular people. So there's an argument and there's a counter argument. So, if the police can do it, then I can do it too, because I can impersonate everybody here on this conversation and intercept your conversations or impersonate your friends or family and get that, get your communications when you think you're talking to your friends and family. All right. We tried to suppress this, and this was the Pick case. Impersonation is prohibited in state and federal code, and because it says you must, it's illegal except where such person is a party to the communication. But in the courts, the justices of the Appellate Court of Virginia have cherry-picked the words of law, and they correctly cited the law at the beginning of the brief of their decision, said, yeah, this is what the law says, but Officer Payne was just a person who was party to communication, so it's he didn't violate criminal code. So by that definition, any person is a person. So any person can intercept and impersonate anybody they want in all of Virginia and intercept anything they want by impersonating them, according to the Appellate Court of Virginia, upheld by the Supreme Court of Virginia. And this is the most dangerous, stupid decision I've come upon. But they wanted to protect the police, and this is the stupid decision they rendered in order to do it. They cherry-picked the words to get the decision they wanted. Okay, executive order. I think I've talked about this. You can't be a lawful person if you can't be visibly present. An imaginary person is a thing. It is not a human being with rights. It is a thing. You cannot use a thing to intercept communications unless you have a warrant. You can't use a wiretap device. You can't use a thing. You can't use a cartoon. This written permission that they get from parents, it's a worthless piece of paper. It's like getting a note from your mother to go rob a bank. It does not make it legal. Like getting a note, sign this piece of paper and let me impersonate your child and intercept her communications. No, it's like robbing a bank. There's nothing in the statute says that that piece of paper is worth anything. Phone calls and videos, just a little note. If the video, you can't record oral communications. There's a special provision for recording oral communications. And if somebody records some officer records a live video, there is audio included. So because there's audio, that also is an interception of oral communications. So I just want to toss that out there. Endeavoring to intercept is a separate crime. So by posting an ad on there intending to intercept, you are endeavoring to intercept. Anyone who endeavors to intercept any electronic communication, you're endeavoring to intercept. That's a separate crime, and you can be charged with that too. It also brings up identity theft, federal identity theft, not necessarily state, because state typically requires money to be involved, but it's the state, the federal level says anyone who commits a federal crime or a felony, such as illegal interception of communications, while using the means of a communication of another person, commits an identity theft crime also. Then means of identification can include photos of someone else. And you saw the ads, they are not using their own photo. They're using a photo of someone else. Phone numbers, like caller ID phone numbers. And if they take over your email account or any other account where it is, especially tied to a particular person, and that is your identity, is through that account. It also violates user agreements. This is, Grindr has got the best user agreement ever. Grindr itself, but the user agreement, they know how to write their user agreements. You can't be, You have to be 18. You can't impersonate. This is private use only. You government can't use it. You can't misrepresent yourself. And if you violate the user agreement, you're violating the federal acquisition re and regulations, FAR. It's a Brady violation. It's a Giglio violation. It's all kinds of stuff. So you can't. It's a legal contract, and officers are required when using any product to follow the licensing agreement of any product they use. If they violate it, it's a violation, and stuff can be thrown out for that. Authorization to intercept. If they actually went and requested a warrant, many states will not allow that to be granted because it's not a crime for which you can get authorization to intercept. In Virginia, you can only get it for murder, kidnapping, extortion, and bribery. You can't even get it for child pornography possession. Federal, I think you can get it for child pornography, but check your state and check the nuances of law for whether or not they actually could get one if they actually apply, but they don't even bother to apply. If they do get a warrant, sometimes they go after people for 3 years. And there's a limit of 30 days for these warrants. So you can't, that's also a violation if they exceed the terms of the time limit on the warrant. All right, any quick questions on this before I get into wiretapping? All right, will I be available in Arsenal? How many states have two-party rules? Check the state because I would guess at least a third of them have two-party or all-party consent rules. All right, I'm going to scoot on and hold the rest of the questions for later. All right, wiretapping. The wiretapping of email and peer-to-peer networks all depends on hash codes. So in order to understand how they're doing wiretapping, you have to understand what a hash code is and how the officers are abusing the use of a hash code. Okay, to explain this, since by nature I am a network protocol engineer, I write the software to transmit stuff over the internet, or not over the internet, over networks, because I've done fiber optic, wire, airspace, before the internet was even invented. So I go back a ways. Anyway, a large file or picture will not fit by itself. It's chopped up into itty bitty pieces and shipped in pieces and then reassembled at the other side because it's just too big to transport. It's like trying to fit a watermelon through a garden hose. You can't fit a watermelon through a garden hose. You have to sh chop it up in pieces, nice little pieces, and then you ship it through the garden hose and it gets to the other end and you reassemble it and voila, you got a watermelon. So here's a picture of a puppy dog. It's too big to transport, so they chop it up in three pieces for transport. A hash code is just error detection. Before the piece is transmitted, they take every bit in there and they add it up in a fancy formula, every bit or byte, whatever you want to call it, and out pops a number. Once it's transmitted, they put it through the same formula, out pops a number. If the numbers are the same, great. If not, you had an error in transmission and some of the bits or bytes didn't get there. So you have to retransmit. That is the only thing a hash code is used for in network protocol, is to check for errors. That's it. And they are buried in the low-level protocol. They are not seen by humans because once it gets there, have you ever seen a hash code in your emails? No. You send text messages. Do you ever see hash codes when you send a text message? No. You don't see it when you do a phone call? No. They are buried in the low-level protocol because once it gets there, it's good and they throw it away. Here's some examples. Here's a hash code, and I invented some hash codes, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Here's front pause, 6, 8, 9, 0, and the tail, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5. The problem is that law enforcement uses hash codes to fingerprint, and this is a term from multiple cases, fingerprint the content downloaded. So if they see a hash code of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, it means that that is the head piece of the dog file. Now, the hash code calculator I wrote years ago was for very, very small things that we were transmitting at the time. It only had a possibility of a little over 16,000 possible unique values. Well, there's more than 16,000 things on the internet. So they have fancier ones, bigger ones these days, but they still are not guaranteed to be unique. They're just calculated from the data. So you can get a number 5. I've used this example 5. You can get it from different multiple files. And it's been proven that the same hash code can be calculated from completely different files. And smaller hash codes have a higher probability than some of the other hash codes. There's MD4, MD5. That's a small hash code in modern terms. There's the SHA-1, which I'll call a medium size. And then there's the SHA-256 hash code, which is the larger one. And the middle one has been proven to have duplicate values from different ones. And the smaller one is 4.2 billion times more likely to have a collision or the same hash code generated from totally different files. Yet they're using this to uniquely fingerprint. Okay, how do they wiretap? This is Yahoo. Yahoo, wiretapping Yahoo and Gmail and a whole bunch of other email systems, but I have the documentation on Yahoo. And NCMEC is National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. So I'm not going to say that again. It's just NCMEC. Okay. Okay. It is a crime to monitor private communications. So service providers like telephone companies, email providers cannot monitor the content. And this is the same interception code as the illegal interception. You have the exception for if you are such person as party communication. You have it also have an exception if you are the service provider. But the service provider gets an exception provided they are handling the communication, but they can only do what is necessary incident to the rendition of their service. That's it. So checking a hash code to see if the bits got there is necessary for the rendition of their service. But checking the hash code for a police database of what to see whether or not it's of interest to the government is not necessary to transport an email from point A to point B. So that is a criminal use of a hash code. Telephone companies cannot monitor phone calls. You can't monitor emails, and the peer-to-peer networks can mo not monitor content that is being transported. And you can't do monitor communications without a warrant. Reporting. There is a law requiring service providers to report any child pornography they stumble upon. But it has a provision in this law saying you must respect the rights of the people that you provide service to. And it says nothing in this section shall be construed to require a provider to monitor any user or any content or research any user or content. That is in the law. They says you must honor the Fourth Amendment law. So what do they do? Throw that in the trash. All right. So Yahoo uses hash codes to detect transmission errors, but they then use it to compare against the list, which we assume is provided by a federal agency, assuming NCMEC, and every hash code for every attachment and every email is compared against this list to see it if it is of interest to the government. If so, they file a report with NCMEC. Now, this is a computer-to-computer automatic report. NCMEC is created or given the responsibility of handling the missing and exploited children reporting list, that center. It is paid for by federal grants, so I think it's easy to prove that that is a agent of the federal government. But the fact that they have all these email providers with a direct computer-to-computer link reporting items of interest that the government wants, I think makes them an agent, but that has to be proven in court. We tried to subpoena them. They refused to reply to any of our subpoenas, and the court refused to issue an order to require them to reply. So we have this little issue. Then they research the user. This is Yahoo. Yahoo then reads all your emails. If your email is flagged, it reads all your emails. It looks at all your pictures to see if you have a driver's license. Then it puts down more information on the report. It researches you on Spokio, Facebook, LinkedIn to get more information just to make it convenient for the government to find you easier and arrest you. Then NCMEC does the same thing, although they have a few more tools. They geolocate you with MaxMind to get your address. And there's no warrant to do any of this. They read your emails without a warrant. They look at your e re everything, look at all your attachments, research who you are, everything, all without a warrant. That's the problem.
Wait, what? Before they even get the law enforcement involved, they've already done all this?
Yes, this is all done without a warrant and before law enforcement is contacted.
Oh my
This is
God.
all wiretapping
So
without a warrant.
it's
Yes.
not just the cops that are violating the law. It's all the people working for all the for NCMEC and
Yep. NCMEC, Yahoo, Gmail,
wow.
everybody. Yep.
That's
Okay.
insane.
I know this is new information that's in my book. Okay. All right. So, yeah, this is huge. And I've got the stats on it here. Microsoft DNA. This is this they some people want to make take a separate little screen grab of a photo to make it a little different. Well, they have software to take your photo and see if it actually matches what something in there, even if you edited it a little bit. Okay. Neural hash. Apple wiretapped their entire iCloud. Okay. Their entire everything you stored in the iCloud was wiretapped. And then they finally gave it up in 2020 because they said this is a violation of privacy. But there's still people sitting in the jail in prison because Apple wiretapped their entire app iCloud. Okay, estimates. I did some math here. The math is boring. It's NCMEC receives about 41,000 reports per day. You can't manually type in that many poor reports. No company can type that in per day. This is computer to computer reporting, automatic, machine to machine. And if you have a machine connected directly to the government, I think that makes you an agent of the government. Okay. Let me go on here. Google supplied 870,000 reports in 1 year. Think of that per day. Okay. And that is about 6% of the total. So you, if Google, Gmail, one of the biggest emails, it only has 6% of the total. You can tell that there's a whole bunch of companies that are participating in this stuff. So at least 17, 18 main companies the size of Google are doing this type of reporting. Google supplies the hash codes to the government. So you have some high school kids saying, I don't like this picture, and they're saying it's nefarious, and they send it over to NCMEC, and the entire world hunts for it. That's what I am gathering. Okay, that has to be confirmed. But on their website, they gave this number of how many hash codes they supplied to NCMEC. And what does NCMEC do? Do they provide it to Yahoo? How, what's going on? Who identifies this stuff? Who validates it? Where's the warrant based on probable cause that these are actually hash codes of interest? By the way, I was just reading some of the other sections of law, and the service providers are required to delete the images upon request of law enforcement immediately. So they cannot keep the images. All they have is a hash code. So if that is true, then all these service providers know about is the hash code. They don't even know what they're looking for. And since there's no warrant based on probable cause, there's nothing saying that the hash codes they're looking for even are child pornography. They could be pro-Obama, pro-Biden, pro-Trump, pro-Hillary, anything. They could be pro-politics, pro-Israel, pro-Hamas. They could be pro-life, pro-abortion, any topic. They could even be a come to a Zoom meeting, and then you're starting to get into the freedom of assembly issues, okay? Because who's ever in power can make a hash code of interest for anything. That's why this is so scary. It's not just for sex crimes, it's for can be for anything because there's no warrant. All right. Now Google has changed their terms of service to say, well, if you read the fine print, maybe we will monitor something. But there's other ways you can monitor for illegal use of it, like overuse, like sending out millions of emails, or there's different ways you can check for illegal use of Google besides looking at content. But phone companies can't do this, and Google can't either, and they're governed under the same law. So you can't say a phone company can monitor your phone calls in order to make a phone call. That is not something that you can put into the terms of use for your cell phone. So Google can't do that for email. I think I've said some of this before. Porn is actually used as a hit job to take out people. They email because I personally know a lady whose husband was taken out by emailing them child porn. And this, so yes, and he was a high-ranking official. When you live right outside of DC, you know some high-ranking officials. He was a high-ranking official in one of the administrations, and he was taken down because they mailed him child porn. He didn't even open it, but yet they showed up on his doorstep to arrest him. How would they know it? Okay. No exception for photos of friends. And they are forced to take a plea deal. The worst case I've heard is someone was facing 900 years in prison unless he took a plea deal. So it's using extortion to force people to sign a plea deal, and then you sign away your right to an appeal or a pardon. All right. That's the email portion of it. Now, peer-to-peer networks, the government has actually procured custom software to wiretap the networks. And this, all the wiretapping that I can see started in January of 2009. What is peer-to-peer service? You might have heard of it, Shiraza, Emule, eDonkey. Freenet is another category I'll talk about in a little bit. They're all these ones are layered on top of the BitTorrent protocol. It's kind of like different vehicles on the same road. It's just the same protocol. Windows 10 by default installs its updates to its customers by a peer-to-peer protocol. They don't ship every update out from Washington State to Virginia. Instead, they ship one copy to Virginia in Springfield, and then if somebody else in Springfield wants it, they simply copy it from one user in Springfield to the next to save on the traffic across the wires. So by default, this is not for nefarious stuff. That companies actually use this transport method to ship major updates and deliveries of software. There's two kinds of bookkeeping files used in peer-to-peer networks. The first is a torrent file, which is kind of like a table of contents. It lists the file, all the pieces, and all the hash codes for each pieces, and the address of where the tracker file is, because that's somewhere else on the internet. The second file is the tracker file, and that keeps track of all the pieces and all the IP addresses that have downloaded each piece. And then there's some other information that is stored somewhere, probably in each service, which is each customer and the date and time they downloaded each piece and who owns each account. So I believe that is with the application itself. But so these are the bookkeeping files that are, because I reverse engineered all this stuff. I looked at all the testimony of officers to see what information they got, and they were talking about those in this database, and I said, all right, this doesn't just float out of the sky and land on the cop's lap. An engineer like me has to go design a system to fetch it from where it's stored and provide it to the officers. So I reverse engineered this whole thing, and this is what I came up with, okay? All right, so first you have the tool that goes and gets this information out of the bookkeeping files and steals it. All right, so they go in online and they break into the bookkeeping files, decode them, steal the transactional records, and load up all the information in a COPS database called the ICAC COPS database. It's run periodically, I don't know how often, and it generates an alert for any new IP address that may have downloaded a piece of nefarious child pornography. All right, here's pictures of the wiretapping software. Thanks to all my fans out there that are sitting in prison and say, hey, I got your book. Hey, I bet you don't have this. And this is how I got this. And I'll go into some of the sections. But this is the actual wiretapping software that they use without a warrant, by the way. And I'll talk about the different sections, but this is just the big picture. Here you can click on what you want to wiretap today. Here's a whole selection of tools. Now here's the pie chart of everything they've intercepted without a warrant, categorized. And like I said, you have adult erotic, which is Playboy. That's legal. So they're wiretapping and they're actually flagging legal content and then going after people who have this legal content. And like I said, anything could be in this pie chart. Pro Biden, pro Trump, pro Israel, pro Hamas, anything you want could be in this pie chart because there's no warrant based on probable cause. That's what is so scary. They're putting in this entire, police state monitor your life system under the guise of, oh, we must protect the children and file child pornography. But there's no warrant, right? Here's a list of the IP addresses and the dates and times that you use the system and geolocated to the town. You can see Key Largo, Florida there. Here's the user IDs, and those can be mapped directly to account names, and the top list. All obtained without a warrant. And here's the bookkeeping files that was in sworn testimony. It has this is by officers. They said they get file names, IP addresses, date and times, and hash codes that gives them the content. Freenet is a little different. It's another peer-to-peer network, but it's all encrypted and it stores all the information distributed on the network. So if you chop it into 1,000 pieces, you distribute the 1,000 pieces through possibly hundreds of different nodes, each storing a piece. Then you recall them to pull them off the internet. It's all encrypted. There's no user information whatsoever. So they have a special computer with customized Freenet installed on it to hook into the network and pretend to be a Freenet node. Now, this Freenet node does not do anything except wiretap. It doesn't. Because there's two main functions of a Freenet node. One, you just have to take care of your user, but the user wants to either store files or he wants to retrieve files. So this wiretap box doesn't do anything because if it stored files, then it wasn't be intentionally putting child pornography on innocent computers. And if it retrieved files, it would actually be fetching child pornography and putting on every single node along the chain, up to 18 nodes that goes hoppity 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 hop back to the cop's computer. So, a police computer cannot plant evidence. So it's logical to say that it could not store or retrieve any data. So all it does is wiretap and suck the data off the network and put it in a police report. Pure and simple. It's a crime to monitor private communications for not only for emails, but for peer-to-peer. And you cannot monitor communications. Same thing, I'm not going to repeat this, the same thing as with the emails. Stored communication law, this comes into play because whoever accesses it or intentionally exceeds the authority to access that facility. And stored communication service is a facility because it is established, installed, and built by engineers, installed on computers to provide a service, namely to transfer files. So, but they break into these bookkeeping files and steal the records, and they break into the computer and they download file pieces. So, all these things violate the stored communication law. There's lack of intent to commit a crime because in the Freenet user agreement, if you're on the network and you request a file, some of the pieces may be a couple hops away, like 5, 10, 15 computers away. So it has to go hoppity, 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 hop back to your computer. And those little intermediate hops are called intermediate nodes. And you could have stuff put on your computer that you did not request. So child pornography could be traveling around the network. You didn't request it, but like I'm in Virginia, if there's child pornography going from New York down to Florida, it could easily go through my computer on the way to Florida, and I could be flagged as having child pornography. All right, remote search of a computer without a warrant. Once they flag an IP address as having supposedly downloaded child pornography, then they break into it and search it without a warrant. Shiraz LE are sometimes called Roundup. This is a Roundup flavor, a tool set. LE is law enforcement only. It allows them to break into a computer and steal the contents of your private computer. There's two main ways to get into a computer remotely. One is through the front door, one's through the back door. The front door is with your username and password, like you normally use when you log in. You can remotely log into a computer that way too, with the IP address and the username and password, but it's a big long command line. I won't bore you with the details because I don't even remember all the details, but I have done it. The other way is through the back door, and you might not realize the back door, but exists on your computer and that you use it regularly. But if you make a contract with Microsoft or that, they will give you updates in the middle of the night, and you wake up in the morning and say, "Look at the new features we updated." Okay, and then they update it, and they have actually used a particular port in Peer, and they have an electronic handshake to say, "We will install updates." It is this backdoor that they are abusing, and they are faking that they are actually a product that you contracted with, when actually they have mimicked the handshake and they are using it to backdoor and break into your computer. It's a two-way access. They can actually plant evidence on there. I haven't seen that occur, but it is possible. They not only can retrieve data, they can plant data. This is called a computer contaminant in South Carolina law. It's also called computer trespass in Virginia law. Other problems, if you make a mistake, type in something, download the wrong file, or something is a nefarious file is labeled as an innocent file, mistakes can never be corrected because these bookkeeping files are not kept on your computer. Unmasking identities, they unmask your identity by chat content. They also use don't they are supposed to get a pen register warrant to decode these bookkeeping files, they don't get. To obtain the IP addresses, like wiretapping, and they only not only get hash codes, they get IP addresses. And they use an administrative subpoena instead of a warrant. A pen register is any process that records or decodes dialing, addressing, or routing information. So IP address is an address. Email address is an address. They're all protected, and there's case law. I've got some case law in my book for it. Now, administrative subpoenas, you can use an administrative subpoena, but the way the law is worded is that you can use it as a subpoena if you know the person, then you can get the information about the product, like the IP address, the telephone number, and this and how their payment. It does not say the reverse. It does not say, given an IP address, we will give you the identity of the customer. And that's what they're doing on these warrants. They're writing a warrant for, or they're writing a subpoena for, "Hey, this is the IP address, give me the person." But that's not how the law is worded. You need a warrant to do that. All right. Now, masking identities, I think I've done that. Here's law does not say the reverse. Okay, I think I already talked about that. Improper methods. There's no pen register warrant to decode. There's no, they use administrative subpoenas and they use illegally intercepted chat content. And those are the laws that are being violated when they unmask your identity. Okay, planting evidence. This is, I have to contribute to a digital forensic guy called Mr. Stephen Coker. This is how they plant evidence on computers. Once they tag you, they confiscate your machines. This is how they plant evidence on your machines. They for on a computer, every computer has a set date time function. So they disconnect the computer from the internet, set the date and time to the time they want the crime to have occurred. Then they copy files onto your computer from a flash drive and voila, they're time stamped according to that time. They can also do queries and they will be time stamped according to this fake time. Then when they're done, they hook it up to the internet again, and then they do their digital forensic. Oh, looky, looky what we found. Okay, phones, similar. If you've ever purchased a phone and you go in and say, I want to upgrade my phone, here's my old phone, copy my stuff onto my old phone, say, plug in the old phone, copy your text, your contacts to your to their computer, and then they plug in the new phone and copy it on there, and voila, you're good to go. Well, the same kind of idea happens with the police planting evidence on phones, and I've got some pictures of this. They disconnect, they take the defendant's phone and they make a backup of it, just as if you would it were buying a new phone. But then they disconnect the phone, but then they set the clock back on the cop's computer. Then they put, you know, I've done a little bit of app development for a phone. You know, you don't have a compiler, linker, and keyboard on a phone. You have to do the development on a computer. So they have emulators, a phone emulator, so you can play with the phone and emulate the phone. That's what the police do, is they can emulate the phone, they can dial numbers, they can operate the phone on the computer with this fake clock, and they can make queries, they can plant evidence, they can put email, you can email child porn to yourself. How about that? With this fake time, once they're done with that, they hook up the defendant's phone again, erase it, and put this fake copy of the phone back into the phone, and voila, you have planted evidence in the phone. It leaves traces, and there's a log here, and I'll just show you the log. If you can see this, on the right side is an order of everything that happened on the phone. This guy has had the phone for a while. It's 6,677 things that he's done on the phone. And it goes from the bottom to the top. The top is the most recent. And if you look at the ordering of everything that he's done, you look up the list on the very right column, you can see the order going in order there. But look at the times. If you start at the bottom, the time should be increasing and the date should be increasing. And it goes from July 20, 2020, then it jumps back to the 13th. Then it goes 2020, then the 13th. Time turned backwards. Then 2020, 2021, 20, and now it's now the 14th. This is an actual case where they planted evidence and they turned the clock back multiple times. All right. All right. Now let me kind of wrap this up here. From what I've seen, overseas terrorists have more protection of their rights to privacy than US citizens do. And that is sad to say, but it is my observation. It is irrelevant whose fingers are on the keyboard. It can be your roommate. It can be a child, but there are a lot of fathers that are sitting in jail because of something their sons did, and the cops said somebody's got to go to jail. So the father says, well, my kid needs a life. So he does the time for the kid. Uncles, neighbors with the only internet in town, a computer repairman, because he did repairs from his home. So they got him for child pornography on a computer that he was repairing. Extortion. Like I said, there's one case where a guy faced up to 900 years in prison and he had to sign a plea deal. Okay, 95% take plea deals. And this is what prosecutors have said. You sign this plea deal or you're going to get 100 more charges. He said, but I didn't do it. And that afternoon, he got 100 more charges with 2.5-year-old information. Nothing new came up. Another judge leaned over and said, I'm up for election, so sign the plea deal or I'm going to nail you. If that is an extortion, I don't know what is. My estimates, there's about 180,000 people who have been illegally prosecuted. And about 5% of them have committed suicide. So there's blood on the hands of these officers. That's a heavy, heavy number. Involuntary manslaughter. Money, $500 million in grants to start it. It's matched by state and local money. And that is probably, you can all probably multiply back by a factor of 1,000 for the amount of money to incarcerate someone, loss of income, money for divorce, and all that other stuff. It destroys families, as you probably all know, or you wouldn't be on this Zoom call. It's a racketeering organization because engaging in criminal activity to get money and is racketeering. And I have heard from a private investigator, and I don't have the that the cops get a about a $5,000 bonus per person they get put on the registry in the form of an equipment grant that they can spend on whatever they want. But you have to confirm that with him. I'll just pass that on as something to investigate. Congress doesn't know it, but they are funding racketeering. And this is kind of a summary: disclosing or using is also a crime, and judges don't want to prosecute. The judges were prosecutors, and they don't want to incriminate themselves. So the goal is to clarify for Congress to issue a clarification of the law to overturn just a small ask: overturn 180,000 convictions, please. Defund ICAC and pass the law so citizens can report these crimes to a grand jury, which is what I'm fighting also. It's before the Virginia Supreme Court. And also, please contact everybody on the House Judiciary Committee because I do have bipartisan support. It is small, but I do have bipartisan support to have congressional hearings on the abuse of these items, these laws. And the wiretapping that's going on, the illegal interceptions going on, the amount of money that's being spent. But please contact everybody in the House Judiciary. I have talked to one Democrat when they were in power, the staff, that is, and I've talked to Jim Jordan's staff twice. They are all very concerned and very interested, but I need more people to be vocal about that. All right, so that's essentially everything. So if you don't have If you want, I will stop sharing. Otherwise, if people want me to go to a particular slide and talk about something, I'll leave it up.
Wow.
So,
All right. We've had a lot of questions in the comments that
all
everyone
right. I found C1 here. Have you found evidence of planning evidence really happening in a case? Oh, yeah. Stephen Coker has multiple cases, and they are now expanding this planting evidence to framing people for capital murder. Yes. And in, One of the guys is being framed for capital murder. He's a basketball player from our area who's down in Alabama. Yes.
What do you mean, framed for capital murder? Unrelated to all this NCMEC stuff.
Unrelated to this, they're using the techniques in other crimes. They're framing people for capital murder. Yes. He was in the vicinity trying to rescue his girlfriend from a scene that was a little getting dangerous. And then he got framed for capital murder just because he's within the area. So, yes.
Wow. Okay, so I see one hand up. I'm
Okay.
gonna let the person with the hand up, because I think it'd be cool if the people who typed these messages and just raise their hand and ask them themselves, because that way they
Okay.
can follow up on the questions.
All right. Sounds
All
good.
right,
Do you want me to
Terry.
stop sharing so we can see people better?
Not everybody's got their things, but
Okay. All right. I'll stop
Terry,
sharing.
you're up. Let's see. Where do I find you? I think they've moved you to the front of the line when you have your hand up. There we go. All right, Terry.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Cool. Hi, Bonnie. I don't really have a question. I just want to say that you were 1,000% right about the extortion. I was involved in a sting operation in Brentwood, Tennessee. I was threatened. Actually, not. Let me back up for a second. You were also right about them planting evidence because I personally, 1,000%, have never ever in my life looked at one piece of child pornography my entire life. Also, I have looked at porn. Yes, I've looked at porn, duh. And it's funny that they found one ambiguous picture on my phone out of 17,000 pictures. When you look at child porn, you don't look at one picture, you look at thousands of pictures. And apparently the one ambiguous picture was people who it was a guy and a girl, and they were having sex. I didn't look at people having sex. I looked at single women when I looked at porn. So that was absolutely planted on there, number one. Number two, I was threatened with that picture. Even it was even the DA admitted wholeheartedly that it was an ambiguous picture. The DA admitted this, but
Well,
said
they will
that if I did
threaten.
not, sorry, so she said that if I did not take that plea bargain that she offered, and I wasn't even going for a plea bargain, I was going for a motion. She said that if I did not take that plea bargain, that she was going to take that picture and she was going to charge me with a Class C felony added to my other 12 felonies, and I was going to lose and I was going to go to prison for 56 years.
Yep, and they
So,
do not only threaten you, they threaten spouses. okay?
They
Because
threatened my
there's,
family. They threatened my whole
yes,
family.
they threatened spouses. And one, they said, you take this plea deal or we're going to arrest your wife and put her in jail for about 2, 3 years. So you lose your house, your home, your dogs, your everything, your career, your reputation, and then
I
we'll
lost
just suddenly
everything. I lost
drop.
everything.
Yeah, we'll just suddenly drop the charges.
No,
And so he
I didn't get
had
a.
to take a plea deal when he did nothing. I mean, he was, and this guy was just indirectly involved in this stuff, but I mean, he had a runaway show up on his doorstep. Okay. It was a w weird case, but a little bit out from this topic, but we'll go up next person. So
Well, I just wanted to say that you were right.
thank you. Thank you very
You're
much.
right.
Right, Davis, you're up.
Thank you for that presentation. You mentioned one of the cases going to the Virginia Supreme Court. Have
Yes.
any similar cases gone to the U.S. Supreme Court?
We've tried. They haven't. Both Pick and Asian tried to take theirs to the Supreme Court, and they did not take it. They did not take the case. You have 1 in 100 chance of being accepted up there. So not yet. Okay.
Thank you.
There is also one to the Virginia Supreme Court. I am currently before the Virginia Supreme Court trying to get in front of the grand jury, because I said it's Virginia history. Virginia's put the grand jury into the Bill of Rights, and Virginia, I have documented the whole colonial history of Virginia that citizens can go in front of the grand jury and present evidence of criminal activity. It was most recently done in Virginia in 2011 that a citizen went in front of the grand jury, but they aren't letting me do it in Fairfax County. So I have sued. I tried putting in a petition. It's a long story. I don't want to bore you with it. But anyway, it's between the Virgin in front of the Virginia Supreme Court, and they said no. So I put in a last-ditch motion to reconsider, and I said, by the way, your honors, there's 40,000 felonies that have been committed against 9,500 people in Virginia, and you might want to handle this in-house before it goes to the Supreme Court. And by the way, it's a federal crime. The crime of misprison is a crime of not reporting a crime, and it can be reported to the judge. And if you don't do something about it, there's also the possibility of accessory after the fact because you're inhibiting someone from being prosecuted. So you become the accessory after the fact. So it is, they have not thrown it. They are pondering it because we're at the 5 or 6 week point for them saying, maybe we should reconsider this. So hopefully,
Wow.
cross your fingers and say some prayers on that one.
All right. John.
Thank you for a very informative presentation.
Well, you're welcome.
So much that you were talking about focused on the warrants search and so on in the Fourth Amendment. But I put in the chat, and I'll ask it now. Do you take into account, or has anyone working in these same lines taken into account possible actual violations, for example, of First Amendment rights, as well as the due process part of the 14th Amendment?
Oh, those have all been argued, but they aren't, they've been like a secondary argument on a lot of these cases that I've helped with, because you have freedom of speech, you have, the 14th also comes into play because, and the 10th Amendment too, because what rights that have not been given to the government belong to the states. So there's due process, excessive bail. That's the Eighth Amendment. How can you be charged with a crime and punished for a crime against a cartoon? That's excessive punishment. So there's quite a few statutes or amendments that can be considered. So but the Fourth Amendment is the biggie. So yeah, but I do reference some others in there as well.
Okay, thank you.
So they all can be used as part of the argument, but the First Amendment doesn't necessarily hold up very well because that's been tried on its own. And well, I have a right to look at this stuff. It doesn't really hold up well. So you got to hit them. And the Fourth Amendment actually has criminal code associated with it. First Amendment doesn't.
Wow. Okay. I have a question.
Yes.
You talked about how Grindr had a really good user agreement.
Yes.
Has that user agreement, are there Grindr cases that go through, or is their agreement so good that the cops don't try there?
Oh, they try Grindr all the time. The judge is just, ooh, user agreement, who cares? What's, they throw it out. And
So it's
it's
the same thing you've been in court before where you say, hey, I've got a whole bunch of evidence that these cops violated all these rules. And, the judge just says, well, yeah, so they did that, but they caught a bad guy, so we don't care.
Yeah, they're intentional.
Because I was going to say, if Grindr was doing a good job of that, maybe campaign to all the other places and say, hey,
you know, have better user whatever you think of Grindr, they run their business very professionally, okay? Because Aishan actually said, this kid is on here, and after about a day, he reported him, the kid, to Grindr. And within a day or two, Grindr froze that account of the cop, and the cop couldn't get on there anymore to hunt Aishan, so he had to create a second account to go after him. So, you know, kudos to Grindr, okay?
Wow. Whatever and so, think of so Grindr, this is a person, Aishan, who's trying to do the right thing. He's trying to say, no, I don't want anything to do with this.
And he reported him to Grindr. Grindr shut down the cop's account. And the cop had to invent another account with a different picture because Grindr would recognize the same picture with a similar name, not the same name, and never disclosed in that account that it was an underage person. And then Aishan was charged with talking to this person which was a bathroom, male bathroom icon silhouette, not even any facial features, just a male bathroom icon, no age, and talking to him with lewd content with no identification that it was the same person because they had subtly different names and no indication of age. And that's what he was charged with.
Really?
Yep.
And it wasn't that the second person never mentioned being young.
Correct.
But Aishan was supposed to just connect the dots and realize that.
Because you had one named LXVA with a photo and another person named Alex without a photo or, you know, a bathroom icon. And they're supposed to be the same name. And you're instantly supposed to know
that. You're supposed to know that.
Yeah. Instantly supposed to know that. And they said, well, and they never did identify exactly what text message he got convicted of. The judge never identified it.
And he actually went to prison for this.
Yes. Yes. For sending a text message to somebody with a male bathroom icon and no age, because, well, you should have known it was the same person.
Wow. Do you find that this is, like, are there just certain judges in certain regions that are like...
This is how we do it. It's all the judges.
All the judges do it.
Yep. This is how it's done.
Wow.
Yep. We've done it for years. It started in Virginia. We know it. This is how we do it.
All right. Somebody asked a question a little bit ago about... when they're doing this kind of mining everyone for, you know, checking to see if you've got the right hashtags, is that something they do for everyone or just suspected people?
Everybody. That's the problem. They hunt all the emails and only the ones of interest are flagged, but they wiretap everybody's email.
Wow.
You have to understand that. They don't know who they're looking for. They don't say, oh, you know, Joe Blow over here is nefarious and Mary Susan and, you know, Hunkelbrink is nefarious. So we're going to hunt there. No, everybody's email is searched and wiretapped. Only those with a hash code of interest are flagged. So if you have this mismatch, like I said, it's 4.2 billion times more likely to get a hash match using little hash codes. And that's what they're using is little hash code to do this hash match. So you can get a false positive very easily.
Well, yeah, they could think that you had child porn when you never really did.
Correct.
But then when they come and check your computer without this warrant, you've got ways that they could put things on your computer.
Right. And, you know, there's been people when they searched the computer, they found absolutely nothing on them. Oh, that's okay. Who's still going to charge you and you have to sit in jail for 3 years with $500,000, $250,000 bond that you can't pay? Or you can either pay the bond or you can pay an attorney. And we're going to force you to sign a plea deal.
Yeah.
With no evidence.
Yeah, and that explains.
No evidence.
It explains. My partner said, you know, when he sent his computer away to he paid for a guy to like look at his computer and they found way more than he was. It was like, oh, I absolutely did not put that wasn't all me. But now we know why. They probably just added extra.
Or it's possible also that the peer-to-peer network used it as a transport vehicle for intermediate shipping. Okay.
Yeah.
So,
and that stays on your computer forever? If peer-to-peer network is like passing it along, it stays on your computer?
Well, there's two answers to that question. One is that the actual pieces of files on your computer could come and go. Okay. But the fact that you have had them on your computer as permanently logged into bookkeeping files that are elsewhere. All right. So there's two places where that information is. One is actually on your computer, but you could completely erase your computer. Your drive could die and stuff. It would still be logged in that bookkeeping file on somewhere else in the World Wide Web. And that's what they hunt for. And they don't care if it's on your computer or not. They will put it there if they don't find it or have it. Okay.
Yeah.
Or, and if they don't find it, that doesn't matter. They'll still charge you and you'll sit in jail for years.
Wow. All right. I see a hand up. Roger, you're up. For some reason, I can't unmute you, Roger. Oh, yeah, I can. No, I can't. Why can't I unmute this one?
Can you hit the unmute button, Roger, too, and see if it works?
Maybe Roger has forgotten that he asked a question and gone to take a bathroom break. Right. All right. So Mike had another question. So all images have hash codes. Does an algorithm scan the image and create the hashed codes? Then NCMEC flags certain hash codes, so someone in NCMEC needs to verify?
When a photo by itself does not have a hash code, an email by itself does not have a hash code. It's only when it gets transported that the transport mechanism breaks it into pieces and then attaches hash codes to it to validate that it gets transported properly. Okay, so when you build a file on your computer, it doesn't have a hash code. By default, it does not. Now, there's a hash code for each of the pieces, and sometimes there's a hash code for the entire file, and sometimes there's another hash code for the email, and sometimes there's a hash code for the email and the attachment altogether. So there's a whole bunch of hash codes at different levels, but they're all calculated based on content. So does that answer the question?
It was Mike's question. I don't Mike? Know. He hasn't nodded or said no.
Does that answer the question?
Somebody asked, does any of this qualify for class action?
That's a good question, because you got to win in the criminal court before you can go to the civil court.
Wait, say that again?
You have to win in the criminal court before you can go to the civil court. So you have to get your charges thrown out or them prosecuted at the criminal level before you can go at them at the civil level.
And since no one will let us win at a criminal level.
Yeah, you can't do the civil yet. Okay, I was curious if NSA NASA's years ago gave precedence to this mess. NSA.
Maybe below me. Are you reading questions from the chat?
I'm reading a question from the chat. NSA nonsense. NSA had their hands slapped severely. So NSA teaches the majority of classes I take, and they have one standard. This is their standard. This is the police, and it's actually below that, because they don't do anything that NSA advises. Absolutely nothing. So NSA has the NSA, various agencies and the military have a very high standard, because I've done targeting. Okay. I've done targeting. I've gone looking at stuff that was foreign stuff on foreign soil, primarily for weapons, but cell phones can be used as weapons, and you have to be able to discern a cell phone that's used as a trigger device for a bomb to blow up our troops from a cell phone used by one of our troops. So you have a lot of training on how to properly handle intercepted communications or weapon signals or that. And if you happen to come upon something that you would believe is of a U.S. person, you have to treat it different. It's hands off, has to be handed over to the FBI so they can get a warrant. How about that? But the stuff that is done there, I mean, the police are doing it, and these email systems, they're doing this, and they have no warrant whatsoever. So you have two completely different, you have the military agencies, NSA and all the other agencies in the military, with one high standard of how we protect privacy of U.S. citizens and even terrorists. Even terrorists have more protection of their privacy, of their communications, than U.S. citizens, according to local police. U.S. citizens and local police, they are giving them absolutely no privacy of their communications whatsoever. It's totally, it's like the Fourth Amendment is just complete thrown away in the trash.
Wow.
So.
All right, Amanda, you're up.
All right. Thanks, Anne, and thanks, Bonnie. I greatly appreciate, all the information. I have attended another event that you hosted in another group. So this is my second time hearing it, but it never ceases to amaze me. Like, I So like my husband is on the registry and he has been for 15 years, but I was going to ask like if any of this has been argued in court yet. That was my question in the chat, but like I've been getting that answered basically from everyone else's question. So kind of TBD at this point. My husband and I were talking like basically I think like a judge kind of just needs to like take a stand like with this. Like we need someone like it's all about politics, right? Like the judges, they want to get reelected. Like they want to do what society thinks is best, right? And society right. like hates all of this and it's just awful. So like changing society's view, like getting this information out, like helping, making them understand like this can happen to you, you know? But mm-hmm. aside from that, just one additional question. So like my husband's case was a little bit different. He was a law enforcement officer and he was entrapped, he left his social media accounts open on his work computer and was set up. Someone else was using his social media accounts and ended up contacting, I guess, a minor or a police officer pretending to be a minor. But this was 15 years ago. So, like, does this apply with not just for personal computers? Like, would it apply still, like, with work computers? Or does that have, like, a completely different, I guess, like, not necessarily code, but like I think your employer's computer is different than your work computer, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I have to look at the nuances of that, but still you cannot intercept while impersonating somebody else and they were using your husband's computer to do something. But still that would be interception. They are doing the interception. It's not like your company can monitor that, or the police office can monitor the communications within the police office of professional the officers that it has if it's providing the account to them mm-hmm. and lets them know. But that still doesn't mean somebody else can't, you know, someone else cannot use your husband's account and impersonate him to intercept. That is still a crime.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. And as far as, you know, I've got some ongoing cases at the moment. But until we get a win, it's really tough to go back and help anybody, you know, in the past. If we do get a win, then it can ripple really big. But that's what I'm hoping for. And by the way, you made some comment earlier
where you said everybody contact your senators.
Yes, senators, especially at the House Judiciary Committee, even if they aren't your members, write the same letter and send it to every member of the House Judiciary Committee because they are, you know, on the edge of having congressional hearings. So please get all your friends to send individual letters, send one a week, a different one a week, but send.
Let's connect with some of these details, with some links for people to make it easy. And then I'll send it out to the whole.
All right. Sounds good. Cause some of them have an online form you have to fill out. Some have an email address. So you have to like go with each one separately. Okay. All right.
All right. I saw Kathleen Garner. I mean, Kathleen.
I didn't ask a question.
Oh,
I see a Massachusetts mic up there.
I thought that was your hand up, but maybe
I'm thank you for calling on me.
That's all right.
It's all right. Let it go. Never mind.
Okay. All right. I see Mike. Where did you go, Mike? There we go. All right. Go, Mike. Oh,
there you go.
Am I unmuted?
Yep.
Well, just to piggyback on the last thing, which was, you know, contact your senators. What do you suggest you say to your senators, like defund NCMEC or
I think make your email like only about three paragraphs, you know, a little over a screen, mm-hmm. very short. Tell them that law enforcement is violating the law, mm-hmm. like interception and privacy law, by doing whatever your case may be. They're impersonating other people or they're wiretapping. Tell them they're using federal tax dollars to do that. Ask them to hold congressional hearings on this and give them a link to my book. Both parties, both Democrats and Republicans, have the staff members, everybody who I met with, asked me in the meetings if I would be willing to testify if they had hearings. And I said, yes. So, you know, tell them that that I'm willing to testify. And you need to have me if you want, you know, use me as a front man. Okay. I have a little bit of credibility and I'm not directly involved in it. So people you know, say, well, if somebody's involved in it, then they're, you know, they, sometimes it gives a slant to their position, but I'm a bit out of it. But I also have trouble talking to any of these people if they're not my congressman or my senator. They won't give me the time of day. But if you want me to talk on your behalf, you can say, hey, congressman, I want Bonnie to talk to you because I just live 20 miles from DC. Okay, I can hop on the metro and drive up and take a ride up there on the metro, the subway, and go talk to your senator or your congressman for you. So I have no problem doing that, you know, but I need to, you know, they'll put me up with the staff. If I can actually talk to the congressman too, that'd be great. I mean, if any of you want to travel out and I'll meet, help you meet with them, I'll go with you and talk, help present the issue. That's fine too. But you have to get them involved, and more than likely you'll talk to a staff person. If you want to call them, talk to a staff person, say, is there somebody on the House Judiciary Committee who would be involved in this? And you talk to the proper staff person. You say, you have to talk to her and call her in, because I'll go talk to whomever. Okay.
Now, for something like that with a committee, like the Judiciary Committee, they can't, because of the committee they're on, they can't just say, oh, well, you're not in my district, so I can't talk to you. Right.
Right. So you can send them emails and say, because you're on the House Judiciary Committee and this is a judicial issue, also the Oversight Committee, because they are responsible for the, how the money is spent, whether it's being spent properly and legally. Okay. Mm-hmm. So if there's somebody on the House Judiciary Committee or the Oversight Committee, that is also a good one. So email all those people. The Senate, they're not quite, I haven't gotten any bites on the Senate. So if you're going to spend your energy, put it on the House, you know, the congressman and the congresswoman.
Yeah.
In your particular state.
Get your state, and also get everybody on the House Judiciary Committee and hopefully the Oversight Committee. So there's about a dozen of them, a dozen on the Oversight, on the House Judiciary. Get everybody, both parties. I don't care what your
party
is.
I've spoke on an issue in front of my state's House Senate Judiciary Committee before.
Yeah, I have spoken at the House Legislature, at the Virginia Legislature a couple times. Yeah, that didn't go anywhere. They don't even want to talk about it in the back room. I mean, I had one delegate, and he could not even bring it up in a back room in a hushed voice. It is that taboo.
So what do you think the answer is? Addressing this from a federal level with some federal intervention sort of?
Yes, you have to address it
from a state level.
You have to address it from the perspective of the cops are violating the law, not that you got caught in a sting. Okay.
Right.
All right. That's how you have to address it. The cops are violating the interception privacy law. They're manufacturing criminals and using entrapment to create criminals. And they're spending billions of tax dollars to do this. That's what you say in a nutshell. And it affected me umpty frats. And just put like two sentences in for how it affected you, because they care about how it affects the country. And the fact that you have a personal vested interest is a nice footnote so they can reference the fact that you're affected. But don't spend the email whining about your situation. Use the time to say the police are violating the law and this affects 180,000 people nationwide. And you need to have hearings on this.
Right. And then the question that I had asked earlier, it was about the hash codes and images and how they're broken down. And basically my question was like, you know, say you take a picture of this Brisk iced tea can. And you take a picture of it and then you go to email it, and the email is like, okay, we got to break this image down into four quadrants, and each quadrant's going to be a hash code. And then it puts it into that data line. And just like you said, with the watermelon, and it spits it down there. And then of course, on the other end, it reassembles it all.
Right.
Well, let's say something in this flagged it. So that one hash code is bad and it gets flagged. And so all the internet service providers keep that as a flag, and NCMEC keeps it as a flag or whatever. Like, doesn't someone have to audit this and say like, oh no, that's not bad material. That's just the face on the Brisk can, you know?
That's the problem, because I don't know who puts these things on the list of interest, because everything refers to it uses the term of interest. But there's also a problem. Not only how do you get something on the list of interest, how is it validated? Who validates it? Is it a high school kid at Google, you know, that's shipping it to NCMEC? And once it's on there, if you have this very, the small hash code that's being used, you could have an IRS tax form that matches child pornography and they could have the same hash code. And you could be shipping your tax form to your accountant and it could be flagged as because the number calculated the same. You know, you could have a picture of your mother-in-law. It could be called child pornography just because the hash code calculated that. Or
so the hash code calculates it. The service provider flags it. It goes over to NCMEC, and then NCMEC sends an email to the local police department and says, hey, investigate this.
Yep.
And then the cops are like, oh, let me seize your computer, dump a bunch of bad stuff on it. Next thing you know, you're getting indicted for something.
Yeah. And you don't even have to have anything on there. They'll indict you just because your IP address showed up. And it could be somebody borrowing your IP address. It could be a neighbor. It could be a roommate. Like I said, they don't care whose fingers are on the keyboard. They don't care which, because the IP address is for your entire router and every phone, all your visitors, all your, you know, place of business. Think of like one guy got picked up and he worked at like a rehab center. You had all the patients, all the nurses, all the doctors, all the technicians, all of them using that one IP address. And he got arrested and they flagged the IP address. And there's one IP address for all of Starbucks, one IP address for a whole hospital, one IP address for a whole old folks home. So who are they going to flag? Because that's the public IP address. And then there's another like local area network IP address that's attached to like my computer associated with my router. Mm-hmm. But they don't tell you which device. Sometimes they do. But they don't say which device it is. It's like, okay, sometimes they might say, well, it was this email or something like that. But there's also a question as to which device attached to that router, you know? So that's a big question.
All right. Well, Bonnie, we are over time. This was just as shocking and terrifying as it was last time I heard it, and more so.
Okay.
I heartily appreciate, especially people who have nobody, you know, nobody in your family, none of your loved ones, or on the list, and you think of the number of hours that you've spent on this issue, like we owe you a bigger debt of gratitude than you know.
Well, thank you. Yeah, so because it's
thanks for all your efforts.
Probably thousands of hours. So
clearly.
And if you want my email, you can put my email in there.
Yeah. All right, I'm gonna put that in there.
Everyone, I can type it in here.
I don't actually remember it off the top of my head, but I will go find it. Or actually, why don't you just put it in there? That'd be easier. Okay, so I'm going to explain to everybody again how to save the chat. So you remember, go to the chat itself, and at the top, there's three dots. You're going to click on those three dots, and then the top thing says save chat. So it'll say save chat, and then when you've exited the thing, in a few minutes, like a little thing will pop up, and it'll be the chat. Thanks, everybody, for coming.
Thank you
I'm
for having
at day
me.
Camp all week next week, so I probably won't communicate with Bonnie about the call to action. But as soon as I get out of the weeds from Girl Scout Day Camp, Bonnie and I will be in touch, and I'll type something up so that we can all communicate with our legislators about this.
Okay, thank you.
All right, see everybody next week or 2 weeks.
Bye.